I admire its purity. A survivor, unclouded by conscious remorse or delusions of morality.
This podcast is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed. Spoiler warning for whatever is in the title of this episode.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to thehorrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible and all other major podcast apps.
Welcome to episode 1 of the Alienathon, brought to you by Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming and The Horror of Babylon.
In space, no one can hear your podcast.
You've been sitting on that for forever.
Yeah, I've been waiting. I came up with that like 3 days ago.
Oh, that should be the tagline for the Alienathon.
It is.
In space, no one can hear your podcast.
Yeah, I'm ready. I have memes and shit all ready to go.
Tonight we are discussing the original Alien from 1979, and I am Ryan, and with me as always is Ripley. No, I wish. Yeah. I wish, but...
Also wish I was Sigourney Weaver.
Maybe that Sigourney Weaver is a sexy woman.
But Daniel's here. Say hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
And thank you to our patrons, Abigail the First, Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and...
Logan,
the Full Metal Patron. And thank you to Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming for sponsoring the Alienathon. You can visit them at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, or the Mall at Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And the creepy, gross, disgusting thing crawling around in the walls is the owner, the Ronomorph. He has a... When he opens his head, his mouth, there's a little bald man that lives on the tip of his tongue that comes out and says, "Buy comics!"
When he bleeds, it's just bad movies.
he bleeds bad movies. Just like little microscopic Yoko Onos just come pouring out.
He pisses Valerian.
Yeah, he Luc Besson is in his genetic material.
At least he's not in mine.
Yeah. No. Okay, trigger warning. Phallic imagery. Yeah. Very, very subtle sex metaphors.
H.R. Geiger.
H.R. Puffin stuff. Okay, our history with Alien. I'm going to let you go first, because I actually have kind of a weird history with Alien.
I also have a weird history with Alien.
Go ahead, because you're the Alien guy.
Okay, so when I was a kid, I had like all of those like Alien toys.
I had a Xenomorph when I was a kid.
I had like 100 of them. I had all of the soldier characters. Anytime a new one would come out, I would sometimes get doubles. I had a massive collection that got destroyed or thrown away or broken over time, because I played with them. And I had all the Predator ones. I had the Alien versus Predator one.
I had a Predator one, too.
And that all stemmed from me watching the movie Aliens, which I watched first. Hmm. And then, because they had, like, a little Ripley that came, and you could get, like, the robot she fights in. Mm-hmm. It's great.
She fights in a robot?
It's like a mech suit in Aliens.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Oh, spoilers.
You spoiled a 30-year-old movie.
Yeah. And then I watched Alien 3, which was the sequel, and then I finally watched Alien, like, years later. Hmm. Maybe not like, massive years later, but it was...
Kid years.
Mm-hmm. And that was the order I watched it in. And I think that the expectations you get for the movies change when you watch them in those orders. Because Aliens is very much like a action movie with kind of a horror draping. Alien 3 is sort of this like somber sort of introspection on the character, which could have been good. and then Alien is a slasher movie in space.
So when we were in college, and actually probably for almost like 4 or 5, 6 years after college, we used to go to movies and like regularly, like groups of like 4 or 5, 6 or
so many. Yeah.
And one of the movies we saw was Prometheus. And everybody was really excited.
I was so excited.
And this whole time, I'm being kind of polite and having like this inner dialogue, like, why is everybody so excited for this movie? I saw the trailer. It looks like a sci-fi movie. I don't understand why everybody's so excited. So I'm watching the movie, and I think I'm sitting next to you, and I think there's at least like 6 people in this group. And I'm like, this is kind of medium. I don't really understand why everybody was so excited for this. But I'm watching the movie. And then about 15 minutes before it ends, Alien pops, the Xenomorph pops up, and I go, Daniel, is this an Alien movie? And you go, you didn't know?
I remember that.
I had no idea. I probably wouldn't have gone because I never had any experience with Alien. But, okay, yeah. So.
That's great. That's a great introduction.
I wasn't a big fan of Prometheus. But then years later, when Alien Covenant is coming out, I'm working at Four Horsemen, and everybody there loves Alien. Ron is a huge Alien fan. He's a big Alien fanboy. And everybody, we would always go after work on Fridays, when Friday Night Magic was over, we'd always go see a movie because we could go to the movie theater there in the mall without paying for tickets, and they would give us like the leftover popcorn and stuff. So everybody's going to see Alien Covenant, and I know it's going to happen. So I'm like, well, I guess I'll rewatch Prometheus. I rewatched it, and I liked it a lot more on the second viewing. And I was like, okay, so let's go see Alien Covenant. I didn't really like Alien Covenant very much. But I was like, well, I should at least watch the original, because somehow I'm managing to watch them in chronological order, because in timeline order, it's Prometheus, Alien Covenant, Alien, Aliens. So I was like, okay, so I'll at least watch Alien. And I watched it at home on Amazon Prime. I waited for everybody else to be asleep. It was like super late at night. It's dark. I'm like, this is super spooky, super scary 70s horror movie. I'm going to get the pants scared off of me. And I thought it was kind of boring. I thought it was really long. I kept like falling asleep and waking back up and rewinding it. And I didn't have a very good time with it. And for a few years, that was probably like 2018, 2019. So for like 3 or 4 years, I've kind of had this hipster take on Alien. But I mean, the thing is like a lot of people who love it saw it when they were kids. And I know I'd have a different opinion if I saw it when I was a kid versus seeing it when I was 30. But then I came to rewatch it for this podcast, and I wasn't really looking forward to it. But I was like, let's try to go in open-minded. So I put it on last night. Mm-hmm. Everybody was asleep. Lights were out. Dark. I hop into
bed. That's the way to do it.
No, it's not. I've got in bed, put it on, and I was asleep within the first 15 minutes.
Oh, my God.
It put me straight to sleep. But what I decided to do was like, all right, let's take the complete opposite approach. So instead, I was like, let's just pretend it's not a horror movie. Let's just watch it like it's a sci-fi movie. Let's treat it like it's a 2-hour Star Trek special. Let's treat it like Star Trek. And I watched it during the day with all the lights on and just sat and watched it. And it completely changed it for me. And I kind of loved it. I kind of thought it was awesome.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, I have only one minor gripe with this movie. And everything else is going to be me going, it's perfect.
I don't know if I would call it perfect.
Yeah.
But I did completely flip on it. Like, I really thought it was boring. And now I'm like, this movie's kind of awesome.
This is another movie that I don't know if I'd call it a slow burn, but it's like the face hugger of slow burns.
I don't think it can really be called a slow burn because, like, The facehugger happens like 20 minutes in.
Yeah, because you get aliens by 20 minutes in.
But it feels like it should be a slow burn because the pacing is so slow. There are all these like long, drawn-out shots.
And it's a lot of like sitting and dialogue.
Yeah.
It's not like the alien jumping out all the time.
It feels like if Quentin Tarantino made like a sci-fi horror movie.
Kind of.
All right, well, let's get into Brett.
He should make a sci-fi horror movie.
Yeah, he should. Or no, he should make another Western. And then
make Django 2.
Yeah, Django 2. Well, he did. He made The Hateful Eight, which I still haven't watched and I want to watch.
I still haven't watched it
either. It also has Sam Jackson in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I really want to watch it. And there's an unrated version of it, too, that I want. Maybe we'll just do a bonus episode.
Yeah.
The vampire's a pure myth, superstition.
I may be able to bring you proof that the superstition of yesterday can become the scientific reality of today.
Background. Alien premiered May 25th, 1979. It was directed by Sir Ridley Scott. I didn't know until I was doing research that he was knighted.
He's knighted.
He's the director of Blade Runner, Thelma and Louise, Gladiator, Hannibal, The Martian.
Three of those movies.
I love The Martian. Gladiator and The Martian. Blade Runner.
I haven't seen The Martian, so.
Martian's great. The book's better. Blade Runner is another one of those where I was like, I didn't see it until I was in my 30s, and I thought it was kind of slow and a little overrated, but maybe if I watch it again...
Just watch it with the lights on.
Watch it with the lights on.
It's like making love. You gotta do it with the lights on.
I like both, lights on and lights off.
Yeah, it depends on my mood.
It depends, yeah. okay, and the screenplay was written by Dan O'Bannon, who wrote The Return of the Living Dead.
Fantastic.
And Total Recall.
Also fantastic.
And his film Dark Star, he has an alien in the film Dark Star, and it was basically like a beach ball with like two rubber gloves stapled to it. And that experience left him wanting to do a more realistic, or at least a more real-looking alien.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what a realistic alien looks like, because we've never seen any. Supposedly.
This alien was designed by either Giger or Geiger, H.R. Geiger. Have you ever seen any of his artwork?
Maybe.
Dude, look some up.
I think it's Geiger.
Yeah.
H.R.
He also designed a mic stand for Jonathan Davis of Korn. Whoa. Yeah, this is the sort of stuff he draws.
Yeah, I totally see it.
He designed the alien for this movie. All the
titties and penises in the world, and look at this ass.
Yeah,
it's totally an ass. Okay,
I compare him to Junji Ito, not in the terms of like what they draw, but like in how it like grabs you, and you're kind of like the more you stare at it.
Yeah, it's a thing. Okay, that's fun. You can Google that and have fun with that. This movie had a budget of $11 million and made $184.7 million,
which is why they keep trying to bring it back.
They've made eight, and a ninth one is coming out next year.
Yeah.
And we will be
And
covering,
then a tenth one.
Yeah. It won several Saturn Awards. It won Best Science Fiction Film, and it also won Ridley Scott, won Best Director, and Veronica Cartwright, who plays Lambert.
Yeah, the other woman.
Yeah, the other... there's three women.
Is there?
I just assume that Alien is a woman.
Oh.
Yeah. She won Best Supporting Actress, but it was also nominated. Sigourney Weaver was nominated for Best Actress, and Dan O'Bannon was nominated for Best Writing. Pat Hay, who is a makeup artist, was nominated for Best Makeup. I'm curious what it lost to on makeup. And Brian Johnson and Nick Alder were nominated for Best Special Effects. I'm also curious what it lost to.
I want to know what it lost to.
Hold on.
This is like the Suicide Squad beating Star Trek at the Oscars.
I don't know if it'd be 79 or 80. It'd be one of those 2 years. So, Alien. Okay, so for Best Science Fiction Film, it beat out a bunch of stuff plus Star Trek the Motion Picture, which I like that movie, but it is one of the weaker Star Trek movies. Best director, Ridley Scott beat out Robert Wise for Star Trek The Motion Picture, and John Badham for Dracula 1979, which I haven't seen that one.
That's I haven't seen that one either.
That's the one with Frank Langella and Laurence Olivier. Frank Langella played Quilty in the 1997 Lolita with a flopping penis.
Okay.
Best makeup, Love at First Bite is what beat it.
No fucking way.
I've not seen that movie. I've never heard of that movie.
Okay.
And special effects, Star Trek The Motion Picture. There are some decent special effects in that movie.
Yeah. Maybe it's just like a preference thing, because I prefer like this, the gritting and like wetness of Alien.
Yeah, well, honestly, there's one thing, there's one effect in Star Trek The Motion Picture that I think is way darker and way more violent than anything that happens in Alien.
Mm-hmm.
It's the transporter malfunction.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, and that's good.
Yeah.
I really like the vibe of Alien, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm... Trek is kind of my deal.
Yeah.
Okay, so going back... obviously, it spawned a franchise with 3 film sequels, 2 film spinoffs, and 2 film prequels, countless novels, comics, and video games.
Before I was into, like, superhero comics, I collected Alien comics. I had a stack, like, this fucking big of them.
We actually went to the library today, and I was looking at the comics and graphic novels and manga, and I looked to see if they had any Alien, and they didn't.
Yeah, they were really violent.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you expect? But...
Well, actually, I think that ties into my Koontz.
Yeah.
Which we will talk about later. and I have actually experienced one other piece of Alien media, which is an audio drama, Alien Out of the Shadows, by Tim Lebanon, which it takes place in between Alien and Aliens, which I listened to after watching Alien, and it's about a ship that finds Ripley floating in space, and their ship gets invaded by aliens, and that experience. And hey, it was fun. I recommend it. It's free on Audible right now, so check that out.
And that's that. Another story in the classic infallible three-act structure. Good enough for Aristotle, good enough for The Simpsons.
Mr. Sizlak, I have a feeling there's going to be one more act to this story.
Well, I'm not hanging around for that. 4 acts.
All right, structure and themes. So this is a question posed for you. How did Alien differ from horror and science fiction at the time, and how has it kind of changed and influenced both genres moving forward?
At the time? I mean, that's hard for me to say, because I experienced a lot of that, like, in retrospect. When I go back and I, like, look at it, I can never remember the name of the movie, that was basically just the plot of Alien. Like, a crew in space, and a mysterious creature comes on and picks them off one at a time. Like, bare bones, the same as Alien.
The Thing?
No, it's something different. I mean, but yeah, it's just... So it takes, like, a basic premise and sort of just dresses it for itself.
I didn't realize it wasn't the first one to kind of do that.
Yeah, and I can never remember what the name of the movie is, because it hasn't stuck into pop culture like Alien has, mostly because of the special effects.
Like, Dracula was not the original vampire novel.
Yeah.
But it's the one everyone remembers. It's the one that stuck.
Yeah. That's how, whenever I'm, like, talking about Alien, how I feel Alien has kind of stuck around, because it took this sort of basic idea,
mm-hmm.
but it had the budget, it had the directing, and it had, honestly, the passion to put onto screen that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why when people talk about, like, sci-fi horror, this is one of the ones that always comes up.
Yep.
And in terms of how it influenced things, there are so many Alien knockoff movies. There's one called Creature, which I've seen 4 or 5 times, that tries to do the same thing. It's honestly kind of boring. There's some weird shit in it that's kind of funny. It's
kind of boring movie that I've seen 4 or 5 times.
I keep going back to it because I keep forgetting why I don't like it.
I think you need to, like, put a note on the front of your DVD that says, don't watch this.
Yeah, I do that for a lot of things. Or I have, like, this vague recollection that I've seen something and go, man, did I actually see it? And then I'll go back and I'm like, yeah, I saw this. And people were chasing its coattails for a while.
You should have a list so you know exactly what you watched.
Yeah, that should... The argument for the list gets stronger every day.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of how it's influenced things, it didn't start franchises, but it certainly helped speed them along in terms of always chasing that $100 million profit high, you know?
Almost 200.
Yeah. And that's just the box office. You got to think about merchandising.
Lots of toys.
And I know this also wasn't the first thing to do it, where it's like, this is a rated R movie. Hey, let's make toys for children. You know, stuff like...
I'm struggling to think of one earlier, like an R-rated movie that made toys. I guess they probably... You know, I probably also didn't make a lot of toys and probably till Aliens. That's
yeah.
just a guess.
I think that's what, like, got it started.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's also rated R.
Yeah.
But action movies, you get away... It's like, they made a lot of toys for Terminator.
And Predator.
Yeah. But that's something that I see so much more of these days, is even if you're, like, a rated R... If you're a franchise, if you make enough money, you get toys.
So, house shopping with my mom, and we just looked at a house, and people are living in it, which I hate looking at houses that people are living in.
Yeah.
But we went in one of the bedrooms, and it was like a teenage boy's room, and he had a box like full of like horror action figures.
So
and
cool.
He had several different Pennywises.
He's so cool. We should party with him.
I'm pretty sure it was a teenage boy, but okay.
We won't drink. We'll just have pizza. Yeah.
And my mom's buying that house, and I'm hoping he like forgets his Pennywises.
I'll add that to my short list for your Christmas presents. Okay. But that's what I think of when I go back and I think of Alien, the Alien franchise, mm-hmm. is the toys. And that's really kind of what got me into horror, is fucking action figures, probably.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you create your own little scenarios and murder all of the good guys because you like the aliens more.
I think I do like the Xenomorph more than the majority of the characters, except for maybe one, possibly two, but we'll talk about that when we get
to the character. Is it the
cat? That was kind of just aside from the cat, because
okay, so.
Jonesy is my favorite character,
yeah.
Like hard. I mean, like, if Ripley is willing to slow down her rescue of the other two and also rescue... at risk her own life to get this cat. Like, he must be a pretty good cat. And I think he seems to be a pretty good cat.
Okay.
All right. So themes, like, so I did something I don't normally do. When I Googled, what are the themes in Alien? And sex was literally the first thing that popped up.
I it's impossible to deny. Like, there's doorways shaped like vulvas. You have the eggs, you have the...
The underbelly of the facehugger looks like...
Ovum and a vagina.
Yeah.
Everything was designed to be sexual.
Lots of phallic imagery from, like, the chest burster looks like a penis. Ash tries to force a rolled-up porn magazine into
Ripley.
Yeah, which came across really silly, but then I kind of realized what they were going for, and I was like, oh, it's still silly.
There's two things I kind of get parodied in this movie a lot. One's the chest bursting scene, and the other one is trying to murder a woman with the magazine.
Yeah. I don't think that's the movie's strongest part, but I get. Also, like, a theme of, like, rape, forced impregnation,
traumatic insemination,
and then abortion.
Yeah.
Ripley eventually kills the alien by aborting it into space, forcing it out through this little hole, just like boosh. The thing I read was basically like she gave the shuttle an abortion, and that's how she kills the alien.
That's fucking great. I love it.
Yeah, it's and then obviously semen, like Ash is filled with, like, jism.
Yeah.
Which I actually didn't... I didn't put... Like, it didn't strike me as semen. Like, I noticed him, like, drinking milk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like... And then when he died, and it's like, everywhere, I was like, man, he must drink a lot of milk. He's, like, got milk all over him.
you have dystopian here versus like utopian Trek. Mm-hmm. And this is like the capitalist future that everyone fears. Like they're working for like this corporation that basically owns everything, Weyland-Yutani. Yeah.
Corporate greed is like a big theme because they're out in space, but they're not like idealistic explorers trying to find.
They're basically truckers.
Yeah, they're taking this this ore and they're taking it back to Earth to be processed. They're not, you know, Picard and Riker and Data out there trying to meet new civilizations and whatnot. They're just trying to earn a buck.
They find an alien spacecraft of unknown origins, and their first response is, how do we make money off of this?
Yeah. Some of them, their first response is, fucking leave it. Let's not bother with it.
Like, who fucking cares?
Yeah, and the rest of them are just like, no, it's procedure. We have to do this.
And depending on the alien lore you consume, like Alien versus Predator versus the Alien comics versus just the movies, this sort of implies that that humanity must have come across alien species at some point.
They say, because I was looking for that, because I was like trying to pay attention to the world building. There's the line that is, we've never seen a species like this before.
Yeah,
which could mean we've never seen a species like this on Earth, or we've seen other aliens, but we've never seen an alien like this.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of left up in the air in the expanded universe. Different people do different things with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing it's not like Star Wars, and there isn't like a story team. Like Lucasfilm has a story team consuming all the different media and trying to
make sure it fits as best as possible. Now it's nothing like that.
Not that all Star Wars media completely fits, because it doesn't, and but a lot they
the,
try.
And a lot of the comics, like Alien vs. Predator, there's some that take place in the far future, and people are, like, aware of that the Predator species exists. And then there's, like, other alien species, but it's not, like, consistent.
Yeah.
I wish I still had this comic, because I would have brought them for this.
They've probably been reprinted into a trade or...
Yeah.
Or something like that. Star Wars, with like the really old comics, they do like those really huge like hardcover collections.
I might get some.
Yeah, there might be something like that for Alien.
Just to like relive my childhood.
Our artificial intelligence, which is really, really topical right now.
Yeah.
It's not like...
What are my chances to survive? Cannot compute.
Not enough. Insufficient data.
Yeah, insufficient data.
Insufficient data. Both in terms of mother and... I didn't write it down, but also Ash, obviously, is another AI. So that's a big theme.
He's a fucking robot.
Okay, so this is I'm going to say this for Ron, because you're not going to get this reference, but Ron will love this. Ron and I are both big fans of the underrated Marvel series Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And there is a character who's introduced in Season 2, who's then a main character from Season 2 on to the end.
They're Skrull.
His name is Mac.
Okay.
And Mac hates robots. And when Parker like starts yelling, he's an android, he's a robot, he's a fucking robot. He totally reminded me of Mac, who his whole thing is he hates robots. And I think it's Season 4, the big bad of Season 4 there is LMDs.
Okay.
And they're battling LMDs the whole time, and it's just like his worst nightmare. So much so that he's like racist towards robots, and he raises his kid to hate robots.
Well, I mean, like, it's not like they're real people.
Funny. Okay, slight Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. spoiler here. They actually kill like Phil Coulson at the end of Season 6, like for good kill him. And then Season 7, which is the last season, he's still in the show, but it's an LMD of Phil Coulson. And he has to work with this character, which is great. But they actually legit kill him. So that's robots. Parasites.
Yeah.
Obviously a big one. Humanity and morality. I love this line from Ash, where Lambert asks him if he admires the alien. Because they never... Is xenomorph like actually a term that's used like in universe?
I admire its purity. I think that's something that was. I don't think it's ever been used in like the first three movies. I'd have.
It's not in this movie, definitely.
It's not in this movie. I'm gonna pay more attention when I watch Aliens tonight. God, you know, you figure I would know the origin of this. I don't.
I admire its purity. A survivor, unclouded by conscience, remorse, or delusions of morality. Reminds me a lot of Dracula.
Yeah.
And him saying, you know, like, morality is a human thing.
Yeah.
We're just trying to survive. We're predators. We eat to survive.
It's getting a little bit less topical as people have become less careful. But I can't let you in. That would break quarantine. And Ripley's being, like, super hard-ass about it.
Yeah. That's... I actually meant to write that one down as a theme, like the disease, like quarantine.
Scientific officers on a ship.
It's hard. That scene is kind of hard for me because, like, initially, like, I'm on Ripley's side. I'm like, no, like, you
don't know what that is.
You're going to expose the entire crew. Granted, 3 out of 7 are out there, so there's only 4 others, but still. But then the other half of me is like, what would Steve Rogers do? And Steve Rogers would probably, like, no, get that guy in here, get him in the bay.
I mean, I would let them in.
Yeah.
But.
It's gray. It's, you know, that you can see both sides of it.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I wanted to mention is it really reminds me of Star Wars in that it's a science fiction setting where everything feels very old, very, mm-hmm. very lived in. The technology feels like very, like, dated technology where they use, like, tiny little monitors and keyboards.
I love it.
Yeah, it feels a lot like Star Wars to me in that aspect.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, they sat there and were like, what will the future be like? Tinier screens.
Tinier screens.
Not exactly wrong.
No.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Before we go into characters, something that I wanted to know, as I was watching this for a second time and kind of focusing on it as a science fiction movie rather than a horror movie, something I wanted to know was, like, okay, what's everybody's rank? What's, like, the actual, like, role that everybody plays in the ship? Because if you just, like, watch it once, you may not really think about who's who. So what I did is I actually looked up, like, everybody's rank and position.
You're gonna have a great time with aliens.
Oh boy. So I just wanted to go over this real quick and then we can talk about the different characters. So Dallas is the captain. Dallas is Tom Skerritt. Kane, who's John Hurt, is the first mate or executive officer, second in command.
Mm-hmm.
Ripley, who Sigourney Weaver, is the warrant officer, who's second officer or third in command of the ship. Ash, who's Ian Holm, is the science officer. Joan Lambert is the navigator. Dennis Parker is the chief engineer. Brett is his engineer's mate. And then Jones is obviously ship's cat.
Ship's cat.
Ship's cat.
Which should be at the top.
Jonesy is his best character, for sure. Do you want to start with Ripley?
We can start at the top and work our way down.
Okay, Dallas. Dallas is probably my least favorite character. He's just, like, that generic captain. Like, he serves his role fine.
Yeah,
he's but fine. He's, to me, of the lot of them, he's probably the least interesting, least entertaining.
There is one thing that I like is whenever they're trying to figure out who's going to go into the vents to look for the alien. He's like, no, I'm gonna do it. Like, I mean, he's in charge and he acted in charge, but you could tell how afraid he was. He has that scene with, like, with Mother right after that, and he's just like, how do I kill it?
Yeah, <it's>
like, can I live?
it definitely has that, like,
and it wasn't like him, like, it wasn't overstated, like, his fear, but you could see it on his face.
Afraid,
you could see it in
yeah.
the actions. I really like those scenes with him.
Yeah, no, that's true. It definitely has that, like, Star Trek trope where they're getting together a landing party and it's like, okay, we're going to send the captain and the first officer, and then they also send the navigator. So, like, who's more important than the captain and the navigator? And they're like, this, now let's send them. It'll be fine.
It feels like you should have a designated away team. I mean, this is a much smaller crew than, like, the USS Enterprise.
The Enterprise has hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it feels like the Enterprise should have a SWAT team.
In later Star Trek series, there are, like, dedicated away teams. Often the plot comes up with a reason for, like,
the
bridge officers to go anyway. But they do try to address that a little bit.
But even here, I'm like, I could've... There's at least, like, 2 people you could have sent instead of the navigator.
Yeah, she's kind of important. And also, the thing that stuck out to me most about Dallas is just like a totally meta thing that has nothing to do with the movie, is this is the first time I've ever watched Tom Skerritt in something and actually knew who he was. Mm. And I just kept thinking of Mark Wahlberg's boss from Ted, who's talking about, have you seen my picture with Tom Skerritt? I'm close personal friends with Tom Skerritt. And he shows up at the end of the movie at the wedding, and Tom Skerritt is his guest. And Tom Skerritt's just like, if you hurt my daughter, I will fucking kill you, you psycho. Because that was, if you said Tom Skerritt to me prior to this movie, that's the only frame of reference I had for that actor. That's pretty funny. Okay, Thomas Kane, John Hurt, who's the first officer, executive officer. It was weird for me to see him so young, because like everything else I know him in, he's like an old dude.
Yeah.
Like Harry Potter, like he, like that's John Hurt. Like he has like bright red hair. I've only ever seen him with white hair. So that was strange. What do you think of Kane?
I mean, I like all of these characters, but I don't, this is what we just talked about in a previous episode. I don't have too much to say on a lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of them serve their purpose in that they all have their opinion on what they should be doing, and then they die.
And then they die.
Yeah.
His character is a source of a lot of the controversy and conflict, because he's the one who initially gets attacked by the facehugger.
Yeah.
He's the one who has to be brought back into the ship and starts the controversy of should we break quarantine or not.
Yeah. And he doesn't have a lot to do because most of the movie he's lying down or dead.
What drove me nuts is that the scene where Ash calls them back in because he's awake and fine, but they don't keep him in quarantine. They literally all go in. They go in there and hang out with him.
Well, it's like if one of your friends with COVID showed up, you're like, oh, we're all infected already. We already let them in.
I guess, yeah. But COVID, maybe. Facehuggers, no.
Yeah. It just fucked his face for a few days. It's fine.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
The chest burster scene is great, though. So
Yeah, obviously, it's one of the highlights of the movie, for sure. And it's the practical effects are awesome. I love the puppet.
God! Like, what else do you even say?
Yeah. Star of the show, Ellen Ripley, Sigourney Weaver.
Maybe that Sigourney Weaver is a sexy woman.
He's not a lieutenant yet, but yeah. I know where he's Lieutenant Ripley, and she was like one of my first sci-fi crushes.
Yeah, she's pretty cute.
I still have my, like, all those alien toys, I still have her toy on my bookshelf.
Yeah.
I lost her flamethrower, though.
I like how level-headed and practical she is.
She's just like, no, I can't let you in.
Exactly.
And it wasn't, like, out of malice or out of profit. It was just, this is procedure that could be dangerous.
We have to follow procedure. And so I actually did, like, a little research into what a warrant officer is. And the job of a warrant officer in, like, the modern-day military is an officer who's a topic specialist who's recognized as being very knowledgeable, and their entire job is to advise the commanding officers.
Yeah.
So that's her job as warrant officer, is to give the captain and the first officer advice on what to do and how to handle a situation, and nobody listens to her.
She's, we can't listen to a woman. I don't think that's what the
I don't think that's what it's trying to say either. Yeah. Because, I mean, she's she's the strongest character in this.
I think if they remade the movie, that would be a theme that they tried to put in there.
Probably.
But I think that it just came from, no, our friend is hurt, let us in.
Which, you know, ultimately
gets everyone killed. But,
yeah. But like you said, I probably would have eventually let him in as well.
Yeah.
But I see the logic and reason, but no. That can get everybody else killed, which is what happens.
She was right.
Yeah, she was totally right. What would Ripley do? Maybe instead of using Steve Rogers as our moral compass, we should use Ellen Ripley as our moral compass.
It depends on if you want to base your morality on good and bad intentions or consequences.
I think both.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, there's a combination. You try to strike a balance.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's just awesome. She kills it the whole movie.
She fantastic actress.
Mm-hmm.
Great sells character. Her roles.
Yeah.
Get to see her in her panties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. Which I forgot about until it happened, and I'm like, Nobody come in right now. Gonna watch this under a blanket. Okay. Ian Holm, my boy, Bilbo fucking Baggins, Ash, the science officer. Why is the science officer always just like the emotionless robot one?
Because science is secretly evil.
God is right and science is wrong. This character really threw me for a loop the first time I watched it. I'm like, what the fuck did that have to do with anything? and I liked it a lot the second time around, because I guess readjusted expectations and knew it was coming, so I wasn't like completely like bowled over by it.
It's like a surprise secret robot.
But you know, and when I saw this, I had seen Prometheus and Alien Covenant, and androids are big themes in both of those as well. So I should have seen it. I shouldn't have been so surprised.
They even have a line in here. Why would they send us with a goddamn robot? Like, they're mad about it. Like, it's something that people don't enjoy.
Yeah. But if you live in, like, this dystopian future where you're basically, like, a corporate slave, then I guess it could make sense to be, like, hateful of robots.
Yeah.
Did you see the trailer for that new sci-fi movie about AI where, like, AI, like, conquers the world? I'm not sure how I feel about it, but it's basically like an apocalyptic science fiction movie where like AI goes too far and AI ends up conquering the world, and like as like human resistant group are like fighting back against the AI, but AI is like spread and like created like a civilization. It's weird.
Huh. I'll have to check it out.
I forget what it's called.
I like how he goes from 0 to 100 during the Ripley kill scene, or when he tries to kill Ripley. Because he goes from like this sort of, you can tell he's sort of seedy and maybe a little underhanded. But he goes from that to, I'm just going to throw this woman around.
Well, it's because he doesn't have anything to hide anymore.
Yeah, like,
because she knows his mission, she knows his priority, so, like, what's the point in pretending?
Yeah, just kill her.
When I was watching it, I was like, he's the one who opens the door and lets them in. I'm like, I feel like that doesn't make sense with his character, because he's, like, the rational, logical one. So if anybody's going to support Ripley's decision to keep them out, you would think it'd be him, until you realize, oh no, his actual priority is to get the alien and return it to Earth.
And there's a scene just prior to that when him and Ripley are sitting together, and Ripley's like, Mother just decoded some of this message, and it's not a SOS, it's a warning. And he says something along the lines of, oh, you might as well just leave them out there for a little bit longer, you know, they're already out there.
And then right after that, she says, I'm going to go after them. And he's like, what's the point? By the time you get there, they're already going to know if it's something bad is happening or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, he's working against them, and you don't really realize it the first time through.
Yeah.
Most people don't.
But when you get on rewatches, you can pick up on these little things, which I like, because it shows planning in the script in the movie.
Yeah, and again, like, I think that's another reason why I enjoyed it more on a second watch, because I'm more, my expectations are readjusted, I know what I'm in for, and I know what to be looking for, and I'm picking up on these things, and it increases my enjoyment. And then we're kind of into the dregs. Joan Lambert, she's the navigation officer. I just want to say I think she's actually pretty great actress. The scene where it's just the four of them left, and they're sitting around like the dinner table making their plans, and she's the one who's saying, let's just get in the shuttle and fucking go.
Yeah.
She looks so scared, and really believe it.
And she, like, people make fun of that, like, oh God line all the time, but she looks so devastated, like, looking at what's happening.
She's just barely keeping her shit together, but she never, like, goes completely off the deep end, so props to her.
Yeah.
But I thought she
But it's a lot of this movie, it's like when I was praising Dallas, it's filled with, like, what I would call believable fear.
Yeah.
Like, there are jump scares, and you see people jump, and then there's, like, over-the-top reactions to scare, like, oh, what the fuck is that? And someone might say that, but there's these very genuine reactions where you have to sit there with what's going on. And I think all of them sell that kind of stuff.
No, I do too. I don't think there's a bad performance in the movie. Dennis Parker, chief engineer. I love this character because he just sells the difference between Alien and Star Trek so well. And so let me explain. So chief engineer is like one of the most respected positions on a Starfleet ship in Star Trek. They're often a command officer. Like in the OG series, Scotty was third in command after Kirk and Spock. Star Trek Enterprise, Trip was the first officer or the second officer after Archer and the Vulcan chick. And Next Generation, Geordi was the third officer after Picard and Riker and Data. Like they're always like the problem solver. Like the chief engineer is like the first person that they like always consult, except or maybe after the science officer. Very highly respected person in the Star Trek lore. And this, like, he's the mechanic who like works in the bowels of the ship. He's the stupid mechanic who goes down there and tinkers with the engines.
Yeah, he's the person who keeps everything running, but he's the grunt worker.
They're even like at the beginning complaining about how they don't get paid as much as everybody else does.
Yeah,
and they don't get as much respect. He's like Rodney Dangerfield. I think I get no respect. So I think his character, like more than any other, just like illuminates the difference between dystopian Alien versus utopian Star Trek.
Yeah,
and also he's really funny.
He is really funny.
Yeah. What do you think of Parker?
I agree with everything you said. I just can't phrase it nearly as funny as that.
And then Brett like goes along with that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because they play him as like a very dumb person.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're like the right hand man of a chief engineer on this huge ship that can be ran with only 7 people.
Well, it's like even today, a lot of people will have like low opinions of some like blue collar workers.
Yeah, like people can look down on somebody for being a car mechanic, but I can't rebuild a
carburetor.
A carburetor. Yeah, like I can't do any of that. Like you have to have some level of intelligence.
Yeah.
Like and
it just kind of specialized.
Yeah, it's a specialized intelligence.
Like, but they don't treat this guy great.
No.
I mean, they don't treat either of them well.
No. And then Jonesy is the best. But we should probably talk about the alien played by Balazs Badejo.
If there was a top 10 iconic movie monster designs, this would rank in the top 10 somewhere.
Yeah, I think for sure.
Probably my personal top 5.
It probably just depends on what you count. Like, do you count slasher killers, like Freddy and Michael Myers? Do you count like movie monsters like Universal Frankenstein, Universal Wolfman?
Yeah, I even think even with all those, it would still get in the top 10.
Yeah, it's probably up there somewhere.
Because I think like the top 5 are probably things that anybody who even hasn't seen them would be able to recognize.
Like Universal monsters.
Yeah. But this is bordering that to where people would like see a picture of it and go, isn't that alien thing?
Yeah, it's like me. Like, when I saw Prometheus, I knew basically
nothing. Yeah, you knew what an alien was.
But as soon as the Xenomorph popped up, I knew, oh, this is an alien movie.
This is an alien
movie. Nothing else about Prometheus led me to believe it was an alien movie.
Yeah.
In talking about, like, physical performance, this is definitely, like, very iconic, like, up there physical performance. Also, reminiscent to me of like Star Wars and like alien people who David Prowse in the Darth Vader suit, and also what's his face as Frankenstein, Boris Karloff as Frankenstein.
Yeah,
just using your body movements and your presence to be intimidating and having it accentuate your costume and your makeup rather than dialogue being what makes you scary.
Like the first scene when we get like its full body shot of it being like an adult, it comes up behind Brett,
where he picks up like the skin.
Yeah,
he's like, "What is this? Like, is this Parker's condom?"
Yeah,
like what is?
And like the slime is dripping off of it, and it's all very slow and very methodical. It's great.
Yeah,
it's a great reveal scene.
Yeah, it's pretty good. My only like, I don't even know if it's a criticism. I was just like, man, and it got really big really fast. For some reason, I had this fake memory that there was one stage in between the chest burster and like the full grown xenomorph.
I think that might come from some of like the expanded media out there.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know what? That might be an Alien Covenant too.
Yeah,
I think there might be another step.
And there's something I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk about until Alien 3, so I'll go ahead and bring it up now. And like the expanded media, whatever the face hugger gets on, mm-hmm. when the chest burster comes out, it has qualities of that thing.
Makes sense.
So
that kind of amplifies the mom and dad creating a thing relationship.
And when it came to action figures, there's like a gorilla alien. That was my favorite. It was blue and it could squirt water out of its head.
I'll kill you all! I'll drive you crazy and I'll kill you all! I'm every nightmare you ever had. I am your worst dream come true. I'm everything you ever were afraid of.
So let's go to scary shit, and where I like to ask our typical question, is this movie scary?
It terrified me the first time I watched it. I think that it does a lot of things for horror, right? Mm-hmm. But I've seen it so many times, and I've seen so many alien movies, and I've seen so many movies that do the same thing, that I can't be scared by it anymore.
Watching it for the first time as an adult, no, I didn't think it was scary. And it was one of those movies that was built up to me like, oh, that's one of the scariest movies ever made. Like, that's the fucking, that's like science fiction Exorcist, man. You will piss your pants. I'm like, this is not scary. But what I do like is like the tone and like the ominous nature of the movie and the special effects.
And there are very few times I will praise jump scares. In fact, I can think of five, and this movie has one of them. It's when Dallas is in the vents. Movie-wise.
Well, that's a movie.
Oh, it's gonna... They better have a jump scare.
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point. Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Can you imagine if they tried to do, like, Five Nights at Freddy's as a slow burn?
An avant-garde, like, snooty horror movie.
Apparently, one of the scripts they had been working with was that, and it was rejected by the game creator.
Good.
He basically is George Lucas. Like, he has all the rights.
Good.
I can't wait to talk about that, but we're on Alien now. But when he's in the vents and it's right on top of you, it's right on top. And then it just turns and.
Yeah. There. I remember. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I think that's how you do a jump scare in a movie. Mm-hmm. You build up that tension and then you offer a nice little bit of release. Mm-hmm. Everybody jumps and then we move on to the new scenes.
Yeah.
Big loud guitar sting, scene after scene.
I do think, had I seen this as a kid, it would have scared the hell out of me.
Yeah. I like how mysterious the alien is too. Mm-hmm. That's something that I'll talk about in the sequels. Is it's very Lovecraftian in this, where it's something that's like so completely outside of their realm of like understanding. Mm-hmm. That's where some of the fear comes in. Like, it bleeds acid and it fucks our face and makes more of itself.
And you don't even get like in The Blob, where it's kind of like that, but they figure out by the end of the movie, it dies to cold. Mm-hmm. And then every other movie, they find a way to kill it with cold.
It's actually funny. And a lot of the video game mediums take after Aliens, and they give you a machine gun, you shoot it to death. Mm-hmm. Kind of takes away some of the fear. Mm-hmm. In Alien Isolation, the most recent Alien game, that only takes the first movie into consideration for canon, mm-hmm. guns don't hurt it.
Well,
flamethrowers only kind of get it to leave you alone for a bit.
There are no guns on the Nostromo.
Yeah.
So, because why would they have guns?
Yeah.
You can't shoot a gun in a ship.
I just like that idea that maybe they actually couldn't have heard it even if they had stuff.
Yeah. No, I imagine that.
And it
probably wouldn't work.
But I also like that they had to improvise what they had.
Yeah.
But just the more mystery you have, I think the stronger it gets. But each movie that we go by, they reveal more and 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 more.
The pacing was, if we would have done this episode after I watched it the first time, that far and away would have been my coons. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like it was so bad this time, but I definitely saw like them lingering on shots for a long time when they probably could have been shorter, but that's kind of a preference thing. Some people like that.
I like it sometimes. I like it for this, mm-hmm. because there's payoffs.
Yeah.
And it's to build like up that sense of isolation, like how alone they are and how they can't, it's not like they can leave the ship.
Right. I definitely would have said change it the first time I watched it. Now I like it a little more. But if you're just talking about like plot beats, yes, this movie could have been like 20 minutes shorter by cutting stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it does help build the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Which I think is important for this kind of movie. There will be a certain class of people who just never like that, but that's okay because it's really like a preference kind of thing. Like some people aren't into that stuff.
Yeah. You know me, I like it.
Yeah.
So.
And it's not a slow burn in terms of like the story.
In terms of plot.
But it feels like a slow burn.
Because of the pacing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I called it like a prototypical sort of slow burn, like the primordial.
Kiss me, fat boy!
Kiss me, fat boy, and this is just for you, because I wanted to hear your take. What would Freud say about a monster that penetrates us and impregnates us, and then we give birth to its young?
You know what? I think Freud would actually have more to say about us calling a computer mother and then sitting in an artificial womb and asking it questions, but I'll stick to the alien.
No, that's fair comment.
Yeah. Freud dealt a lot with psychosexuality, and a lot of people dismiss a lot of what Freud had to say these days, where my opinion is actually sort of mixed. I think he was onto a lot of stuff. We just didn't have the terminology for it back then. He had stuff like Electra Complex, where he was noticing women wanting to have these masculine traits and vice versa, and this weird sort of sexualization of the parents. And like, look how big like mommy-dommy GFs are on the internet now. Freud is laughing at everybody who ever mocked him, thanks to the internet.
Just go on xnxx.com and it proves
Freud,
incest is like the biggest tag on there, by far and away.
And
it's both sides.
Something that Freud talked about, and I don't remember the exact quote, but it's always sort of stuck with me, that there's only like these two really fundamental truths to life, and that's sex and death. People want to fuck, and people are gonna die. What does this combine?
Those two things.
Fucking and dying.
I would say life and death.
Yeah. He equated like sex to life.
It's the same thing, but I prefer to say life.
and it's even like a walking symbol. It's like a giant penis that fucking can kill you.
Would Freud have said that the traditional Wookiee holiday is sex day instead of life day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where he caught Freud. I won't deny that Freud was like a little sex obsessed, especially with his terminology.
Yeah.
But that's still my opinion. I'm not a psychologist. I only have an undergraduate degree.
Yeah.
But I have read like
from a third rate state university.
Yeah.
My degrees are from the same third-rate state university, so no shade.
But I have gone out of my way, not even for my degree, to read three of Freud's books. So I actually do enjoy Freud in terms of comparing it to what people say, oh, he was a hack, and then looking at the internet going, you sure about that?
I read part of his wiki page. I know what I'm talking about.
You sure maybe he just wasn't on to maybe like a trans identity and just didn't have the terminology to express it yet?
Oh my God, are you Stephen King?
No, I'm Dean Koontz.
Oh.
Now we move on to Kings and Koontz. Ryan, what is your king for Alien? And I would actually say that my king is the Nostromo. That ship is fucking sweet.
That ship is pretty sweet.
Both in terms of like the model that you get to see flying through space, and just like the set dressing within the ship, like it kind of, like I said, it kind of brings me back to Star Wars, where it's very like dirty, mm-hmm. and old and lived in, But then it goes like a step farther than Star Wars. It's just more dark and ominous and dystopian. And it feels so real. And it's like the perfect setting for this movie.
I struggled with my kink, but it's the alien. It's an iconic design. I think it looks great. I think the actor does a great job selling it as a living entity. Mm-hmm. I think the director did a good job with the costume designers, and like putting it together to make it like look and feel like it's actually moving realistically. My runner-up was Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
She's in my top three for sure. Yeah. It's probably my runner-up would have been her or Ian Holm, and then the other one would have been third place.
Yeah.
They're both great. I mean, pretty much everybody's great in this movie. For Koontz, my Koontz is something we haven't talked about yet, but I alluded to earlier. This movie has a reputation for being super violent, and I feel like it's not earned. I feel like there are two very violent scenes. One is the chest bursting scene, and the other one is Ash attacking Ripley. But aside from that, I feel like all of the deaths are very tame.
Yeah, most of them you don't even get to see. You don't even know what the alien's doing with the bodies.
It just grabs them and takes them off screen for the most part. And there's no, like, real gore or blood. And not that I'm complaining. Yeah. I just feel like this movie has a reputation for being, like, a really violent, bloody, gory movie.
The smartest thing they did was deleting the scene of what the alien's doing with everybody.
Yeah, no, that... Like I said, I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
My Koontz is really the reputation it has, mm-hmm. which isn't earned, because there is violence,
there's more violent movies out at the time. Like, you take your basic slasher.
Mm-hmm.
My Koontz. I was gonna say Ripley going back for her cat, but I would have done the same thing.
Before I thought of that, my Koontz was her putting on the spacesuit.
Fuck it, it's her putting on the spacesuit.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty shitty. Like, no, take it off.
She does make it look good, though.
Yeah, she makes anything look good.
Maybe that Sigourney Weaver is a sexy woman.
I agree.
And she is more than that.
Yeah,
as well.
Smart. She's the strong female character that I love.
Yes. And then for Zombie Day, I just had a little thing. The Nostromo is named after the ship that is the title ship of the Joseph Conrad novel, Nostromo.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are not familiar with Joseph Conrad, he wrote Heart of Darkness, which is the very acclaimed novel that Apocalypse Now is based on.
I still really need to read that.
Yeah. The book is... We would have a conversation about the book.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely worth reading. Homework. What type of underwear would you be wearing as you're battling the alien?
It wouldn't be underwear, it would be a cock cage, so I wouldn't get hard.
Does that really prevent you from getting hard?
I mean, like, you will start to get hard, but you won't be able to grow, and it's super painful.
Oh, I guess I don't know what a cock cage is.
Yeah, it's like a little cage that, like, fits over your flaccid penis.
Mm.
And locks on around your balls. That's what I would fight wearing where we're fighting the alien.
Hmm. Okay. That's cool. for me, for Star Trek Enterprise fans, the classic episode where Trip does battle on behalf of the entire Enterprise crew in his underwear, I would wear the same undershirt and blue boxers that he wears in honor of my favorite chief engineer, Trip. May you rest in peace. He died too young. Question for the listeners. When did you first see Alien? Did you see it as a kid? Did you see it as an adult? How does that change your opinion? Or have you not seen it? If you haven't seen it, why the hell are you listening to this? Go watch it, and maybe listen to this afterwards. For further reading, I do recommend Tim Lebanon's audio drama, Alien Out of the Shadows. Like I said, if you have an Audible membership, it is free. And again, it takes place in between Alien and Aliens. So if you're following along with the Alien-a-thon, you can listen to that now before you watch Aliens and be right there in the timeline as it happens. And then I also recommend the Futurama episode Murder on the Planet Express, which is their alien parody, and the Star Wars Bad Batch episode Metamorphosis from season 2, which is a Star Wars nod to Alien, where the Batch is alone on a spaceship with an alien that's going to kill them, and it's pretty cool.
Sounds great.
Yeah. You remember the Godzilla episodes of the Clone Wars?
Yeah.
It's that, but it's like a young Zilla Beast.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. A Zilla Beast is what it's called. What do you recommend for people who enjoy Alien?
Aliens, the Thing.
Aliens, the Thing. Yeah.
Those would be like the big two. If I can ever remember the name of that, the movie that was just Alien before Alien.
The Thing from Another World, 1951.
Oh, I mean, that's also good, but that's more, that's The Thing. That's not the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, is that the, like, the original version
of The Thing? Yeah, that's the version of The Thing.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that was a remake for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
It's like an obscure B-movie.
If you think of it, yeah, let me know and I'll add it.
Hide it in.
Remembering three classic movies that inspired Alien.
Well, this might have it.
It, The Terror from Beyond Space.
Maybe.
Planet of the Vampire.
Oh, that's also great. That movie's so bad. Go watch it.
And Dark Star, which we mentioned.
Dark Star, yeah. Go watch the Alien knockoff. Go watch Creature and tell me why I don't like it.
For the 7th Saturn Awards, the best film produced for under $1 million was Planet of the Dinosaurs.
Rawr.
Upcoming on Horror Babylon. This Sunday is our next Salem Slot episode, where we discuss the theatrical film A Return to Salem Slot from 1987. And then the following Sunday, August 6th, we review the newer miniseries Salem Slot from 2004. And then, of course, our next two Thursday bonus episodes will be Aliens and Alien 3. And thank you to our patrons, Abigail the First, Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and
Logan,
the Full Metal patron. And thank you to Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming for sponsoring the Alien-a-thon. You can visit them at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, or the Mall at Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and say hello to Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas, whose picture was on the cover of that magazine that Ash tried to murder Ripley with. That he picked it up and he saw that horrendous picture and he's like, I must murder someone. So yeah, thank you for rewatching Alien and recording with me.
Oh, I had a great time.
Yeah, it was a good episode, and I don't often get to flip on a movie, but I always appreciate it when I do.
I would prefer to flip in a positive direction anytime.
I don't often flip in a negative direction. The only time that really happens, it sometimes happens with something as I liked as a kid, hadn't seen for 10 or 15
and
years.
And then you go back and watch it.
As an adult, it's like, oh, this, like,
maybe not.
Good Burger was a movie I flipped on negatively.
People keep telling me that. I'm like, then I will never rewatch it. I will keep the memories.
Don't rewatch it.
I shall keep the memories of Good Burger.
Yeah, just don't. All right. I think we can end it on Good Burger. Stay scared. Home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order? He's a dude. She's a dude. We're all dudes. Hey. All right. Stay scary.
Stay scary.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share, and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher, and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to thehorrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and all other major podcast apps. Stay scary. Thank you.
more and 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 more